So, you know, like all of you, I have had my share of adversity in life. And for me, it started in my childhood, very rocky childhood in Utah, with extreme religion and poverty and oppression and abuse and violence, and even watching my dad get violently arrested in front of me. But nothing compared to the moment when I was 37 and walked into an eye doctor's office and was told that I was going blind. And I mean, the B word has always terrified me, and that news was so devastating that it was crippling. I mean, at the time, I was a 37-year-old mother with two young daughters, ages 5 and 2. They had playdates in preschool to attend, and I was a social justice journalist getting ready to go to South Africa to write about the plight of AIDS orphans for an NGO. And I was a free spirit. I had spent my summers all throughout my teenage years crisscrossing the country in a beat-up pickup with my vagabond dad, where I really learned to relish the feel of my foot on a gas pedal and that open road in front of me. And suddenly, all of that was being stripped away from me, or at least that's what it seemed at the time. And at the time, even though the doctor told me I was legally blind, I didn't even really recognize it, because the way my eye disease, retinitis pigmentosa, works, it first knocks out your night vision and then peripheral, and then just continues to close in on me. And at the time, I had 10 degrees of peripheral vision, but I didn't really notice it other than bumping into things. My brain just sort of compensated for it, and my central vision was 20/20. So really, I was fine. But when I thought about the future that awaited me, it was so petrifying. I had nightmares over it, and it always came down to this single image of this woman that I had once seen, and she was shuffling down the street with a white cane in front of her, and she was dressed in this red suit. I remember it so clearly. It was a red skirt and a red jacket and a matching red hat, fire hydrant red, with disheveled hair and this bright blue eyeshadow and this orange-red lipstick that clashed and didn't quite make her lips. And at least from the outside, she just looked so lonely and so alone and represented everything that I stood to lose. And I just made a vow that that was not going to be me, that I was not going to be that woman, and I would never have one of those white canes. And my doctors just kept saying, you know, there is no cure. There's nothing that you can do to save your eyesight. But I thought, you know what? They're wrong. I mean, I've always grown up, again, with a lot of challenge and adversity, and I've always just believed that you can overcome, that if I want something bad enough and if I try hard enough and I give it everything I've got, I can have what I want. So I set out on a quest to save my eyesight, and the first thing that I did was change my diet. At the time, I ate a lot of processed foods and drank a lot of diet sodas. I sort of grew up on those, and turns out horrible for eyesight, which I didn't know, but I changed my diet and became mostly vegan. Now I'm completely vegan, other than occasional salmon. And I started staring into a color therapy lamp to work on my colors. And I started applying microcurrent stimulation to my eyes, to my retina. It sends these electrical currents to your retina to try to keep things going with circulation. And I started downing cocktails of vitamin supplements. And for a while, my eyesight was steady. I mean, so much so that I sort of let my foot off the gas pedal and became complacent. And then in February of 2013, I went back to a retinal specialist, and she told me that it had closed into 5 degrees, and that terrified me. I mean, I'd lost half of my remaining eyesight, even though my central vision was still 20/20. So I thought, okay, I'm doing everything in my power to save my eyesight. So I started a blog called Determined to See, because again, I've always believed in putting my intentions into the universe. And then I set out to do everything. So I went back to staring into that color therapy lamp, and I continued my microcurrent stimulation, and I continued eye exercises and downing those cocktails of vitamin supplements, and I added Chinese herbs. And then I also started flying to New Jersey 4 times a year to undergo this specialized acupuncture that's been helpful in treating my eye disease. And sure enough, it really was helping. My peripheral vision out of my mid-periphery, it started expanding here. I still had this tight donut of blindness, but it was expanding to the point that in early spring 2014, I went skiing for the first time in years. I even picked up a tennis racket and started trying to play tennis because I could see in my mid-periphery, and I thought, I've done it. I have conquered my adversity. So I'm going along feeling really good about things, and in late November 2015, in fact, it was the day before Thanksgiving, I went in for just a regular annual preventive exam, and my doctor found a lump. And that lump turned out to be an aggressive form of breast cancer. And I thought, wow, what do you mean? My eyesight's my adversity. Like, I'm not supposed to have another adversity. But there I was, handed that. And I didn't really think about the cancer in terms of, as scary as it was, having a long-term impact in terms of life or death. But what I did think about was, please don't let the chemotherapy for this knock out my eyesight. And what do you know? That chemotherapy knocked out a big chunk of my eyesight. Within two rounds, my central vision had gone from 20 over 20 to 20 over 70. And within four treatment cycles, it was so foggy that my oncologist and I both decided to stop two rounds short because neither of us could live with the idea that I was going to go completely blind. So it was tough, and it knocked me down. But once I had absorbed it and I got back on my feet, I thought, you know, I just have to try harder. So I continued to do all the things that I was doing. But through my Determinacy blog and a Facebook group that I had started, I had heard about this stem cell treatment in China. So I thought, that's what I need to do. So the summer of 2017, my daughter Sydney, who a couple of you met, did a GoFundMe campaign and raised the funds to send us to China. So I went to China and I got these stem cell implants. And I also got what's called a vascular shunt surgery, where they drill holes on either side of your head and they go in and they reroute a couple of your arteries to your retina to increase blood flow and circulation. And it was like magic. I mean, not only did my central acuity increase by several lines, I was seeing in the dusk for the first time since my 20s. It was remarkable. I mean, I went to the eye doctor in October 2017, and with corrective vision, this eye was 20 over 25, and this eye was 20 over 65, and I thought, I've finally done it. I have conquered this adversity. But then in February of last year, so February 2018, I started noticing that my color vision was beginning to fade, and everything took on this greenish-gray hue, like the aftermath of a nuclear holocaust. And then my light perception started to dim, and that is always a challenge with people with retinitis pigmentosa. But so that dusk that I was now seeing and went away, and even in the light, I was starting to have a more difficult time seeing. And then last summer, I realized that I could no longer make out the words or the numbers on my iPhone. And then in September, just as I was wrapping up a ghostwriting book project, I realized that I could no longer make out the words on my computer screen. And within a couple of days, I walked outside and realized that I could no longer see down the block. It was just this dense greenish-gray fog. Like, I couldn't see anything in front of me. And around that same time, I realized that I could no longer make my face out in the mirror or the faces of the three people I love the most, my husband and two daughters, Sydney and Hannah. And I cannot put into words how devastating that is. But I thought, okay, I've just got to try harder. And by now, I was also doing daily gut massages for 2 hours a day, and I was soaking my feet in mugwort each night, and I was doing deep breathing exercises and cold water therapy and all the other things that I was doing. I mean, devoting 4 hours a day at least to trying to see. But in the meantime, I thought, okay, I've got to deal with my current reality, and I've got to get back to work. I mean, I'm a writer. So I reached out and was able to find some voiceover accessibility training so that I could get back to basic writing and editing and at least sending emails. But then it was like, wow, I've got to deal with this mobility thing. And I thought, I just can't do that cane. Like, as long as I don't have to do that cane, I'm on the seeing side of the world. The minute I hold on to that cane, it's over. And my husband, who's been really supportive, started looking for answers for me. And he saw in December this Radiolab report about something called the BrainPort Vision Pro. And what it does, it sits on your head like a halo, and there's a camera on it that takes images, and then you have a sensor sitting on your tongue. And when those images pick up by the camera, it implants on your tongue, it imprints, much like if someone drew a letter A on your back, and you can identify that shape. And I thought, this is my answer. So the nearest place for the training was San Francisco. And when I called down there, the mobility trainer said, I mean, this isn't what you need. It isn't going to work for you. And I said, yes, it is. And she said, no, what you need is K-training. It's like, no, I don't. What I need is this Springport Vision Pro. And after going back and forth, she said, fine, come on down. So in early April, I went to San Francisco with my husband and daughter, Sydney, and went through this training, and I wanted it desperately. But I went in, and she put on blinders because I still can see bare light perception. And then, and the way this thing works, it's light and dark contrast. So she sat it on my head, and then there was a dark curtain in front of me, and she started putting light-colored objects in front of it. And she put a ball in front, and I could figure out that it was circle because I got zapped on my tongue in a circle shake like an electric shock. And then she started running other objects that I learned later were like a banana or a cylinder, and I couldn't make out anything other than I was getting zapped all over my tongue. And if I moved the camera the wrong way and picked up the wall, I'd get zapped by that, or if I caught the edge of the table, I would get zapped by that. And in the meantime, I'm drooling out of the side of my mouth because I'm trying to hold this sucker sensor on my tongue. But I thought, no, I am going to do this. This has got to work. And so after 4 hours, we quit for the day, and I thought, you know, I've just got to try harder. So the next day, I showed up again, and I said, let's take this outside into the real world. So she's like, are you sure? It's like, yeah, let's go outside. So we go outside on the sidewalk, and suddenly, I mean, I am getting zapped everywhere. There's a crack in the sidewalk, and I'm getting zapped across my tongue this way. And then there's the side of the sidewalk, and I'm getting zapped this way. And then every time a head or a building or a sign, I mean, I'm like electric shocked all over my tongue. And after about 10 minutes of this, I said, you know, you're right. This isn't going to work. And the next thing I knew, I was shuffling down the streets of San Francisco with the mobility trainer walking behind me, calling out instructions. And I'm swiping that sidewalk with that long white cane in front of me, fighting back tears and the urge to slam that cane into every person and everything that I came across. And I was just so angry. And the thing is that it was helping, and that made me even more angry. And I went back to Seattle, and I was just so devastated. And I went into this dark hole. I mean, I canceled every appointment, and I just really couldn't pick myself off the ground. I just thought, you know, that stick, that white cane, just made my inability to see my daughter's faces so final. And I thought, I don't know if I can go on, really. But, you know, I have always been a glass half full kind of person, really like a glass 9/10 full kind of person. And somewhere amid that dark place and that despair, I remembered something that my dad once said to me. He said, as long as you keep on going, you never know what you can accomplish. But the minute you quit, you have your answer. And I realized as I was sitting there, it's like it doesn't have to be over. I can still continue my quest to see. I mean, there are so many advances and breakthroughs taking place, so much reason to have hope. And I can just stand back up and continue my quest to see. But what I also realized as I was sitting there is that regardless of what I see or don't see, I only live a life of darkness if I choose that life of darkness and if I allow it to be that. And what I realized is that, like any of us struggling with adversity and challenge, and we've all got it, I realized that I had a choice. I could either continue to wallow in that suffering and wallow in my grief and my loss and my despair and my anger and my fear, or I could harness my adversity and I could channel all that energy that I was putting into that loss and that grief and channel it into something powerful. And that's when I asked my daughter Sydney to order me a mobility cane. And my one act of defiance is like, no way am I having one of those white ones. I just won't do it. Like, I refuse to have that B word be my identity. And there is one company that makes different colored mobility trains. So of Canes. And I had her order a purple one, and I'll show you where it is if I can see it. Where is it?
It's right there.
Oh, whoa.
That's okay, we'll get it.
Clearly I can't see it, but I'm like,
there you go.
So here it is. This is it. And you know, I dubbed this Purple Power.
Yes.
Purple Power. And when this cane came, I just had to sit with it and absorb it. And it was tough. But the next day, I forced myself to take it out in my neighborhood. And one of the most emotionally hard things I've ever done. But between Purple Power here and my GPS systems on my iPhone, I was able to walk the mile from my office, I mean from my house to the office I share with my husband, alone for the first time in months. And I really had to think about it, because I can tell you, I do not want to navigate my world with a cane, even if it is purple. I don't want to do that. But I have also thought, I can either continue to let this stick traumatize me and take my power, or I can use it to empower me until I no longer need its power and I can hand it off to someone else. So I then started thinking about, well, what does it mean to me to harness adversity? And for me, it really means refocusing my attention from loss and fear. And I think particularly fear is a big one for so many of us. But again, it's refocusing my attention from loss and fear to the things that bring me passion and joy. And I've realized it's about replacing the word weakness with strength, and about shedding limits and thinking big. And like my favorite inspirational author Joe Dispenza says, it's about blessing our challenges so that they initiate us into greatness. And I thought, well, God, I mean, how do I do this? How do I do this on the mornings when I wake up and I'm just having a really tough day? So I started doing some things, all of which I've borrowed from a variety of self-help books that I've listened to over the years, but I wanted to share them with all of you in case they help in any way. So the first thing that I do if I wake up and I'm having a tough day is that I go in my living room and I crank up James Brown's I Feel Good and do a happy dance in the living room. Really. And it can be 6 a.m. and my husband will say, what are you doing? It's like, I'm doing my happy dance, you know? And it's amazing. It really resets my attitude and I get those endorphins going, and it's great. The other thing that I do, and it sounds so simple, but I've started practicing gratitude. So now when my husband and I walk to the office, I'll say, okay, 3 things that you're grateful for. Say them out loud. So he'll say them out loud, and then I will name 3 things that I'm grateful for, and it shifts my focus to the blessings and gifts in my life. And it sounds so simple, but it makes a big difference. I really started looking at my life and all of our lives like a coin. And on one side of the coin, I see all the loss, like my grief and my despair and all the challenges and my fear. But on the other side of that coin is everything that's right in my life, all the blessings and all the gifts. And I've got so many of them. And I realize, I mean, they're both true. Both of those sides of the coin are true. But it's what I focus on that expands in my life. I mean, it really is the law of nature. If you focus on loss and grief and despair, and if that's the energy that you put out into the universe, that is the energy that comes back. If you focus on abundance and blessings and joy and all that's right in your life, that's the energy that you put out, and that's what comes back. So now, when I find myself focusing on that loss side of the coin, I am really aware of it, and I consciously shift my attention from that loss side to the gain side, everything that's right. And it's just made all the difference in my life. So the thing is that in some ways, I'm still figuring out what I'm going to do with the rest of my life, because when I think about a world without limits, I mean, the opportunities are endless. And the biggest thing is that my fear is gone. It is so gone, because the thing that I feared most in my life, losing my eyesight, has happened. And yeah, it's tough, but I am still here and I'm still standing and I am still moving forward. So I'm still figuring out what it's going to look like, but I know that I'm going big. And in the meantime, one way that I know I can harness my adversity and use it as a strength is to share my story to help others. And I first started doing this 7 years ago when I teamed with a teacher at an alternative high school and started using my coming-of-age memoir, Hippie Boy, which deals with my rocky childhood, using it as a guide to help her students find their voice and power by writing their deeply personal stories. And since then, I've worked with probably 2,000 people of every age and used my story to help them find their voice and power by writing their stories. And it is so powerful. It's magic. What I've discovered is that when I share my story, or we share our stories, it serves as permission and gives others permission to share their stories. It serves as a connection point. It helps us recognize that we are all alone. In some ways, it helps us realize that our challenges are universal. It takes off our mask, because so often we're all walking around with these masks and think that we're the only ones struggling with the struggles that we have. Recently, I was doing a storytelling workshop with seniors aging in the LGBTQ community, and a lot of them struggle with disability. And afterwards, several came up and said, "I feel heard for the first time in years. Like, you get it. You get my story because of what you've gone through." And again, I realized, wow, that's how I'm harnessing my adversity and using it as a strength. The other way stories are so powerful is that they really raise awareness and foster the understanding and empathy necessary to drive change. That's another way I am going to use my adversity. I'm going to share my eyesight struggle as far and as wide as possible to help raise awareness and change societal prejudices that slap these labels on certain challenges that are in this disabilities category and really separate people and isolate them, which just fosters so much more pain when, trust me, it hurts enough without it. I mean, right after this all came down for me in September and I was looking for an answer, assistive technology training, so I could get back to work, I contacted an organization that helps people with visual impairments. And when I asked if they could help me with assistive technology training, they said, "I'm sorry, but we're under an indefinite budget freeze." And I said, "Okay, so who can I call?" And they sent me to this organization called Sight Connection. So I called and I left a voice message. And when the guy called back, he talked really, really slow. Like, now my IQ was gone because my eyesight's bad. And then he said, "I don't know why they sent you to me. I mean, my organization doesn't work with people who are in the workforce." He said, "But I tell you what, you live in Ballard, right?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, there is a senior center in your neighborhood, and I recommend that you join it because," he said, "senior center with a vision loss support group." And he said, "You should join that vision loss support group because you're now going to start experiencing a lot of stigma and social isolation." And I mean, this is the guy who's supposed to be helping me. And I thought, I don't need a vision loss support group at a senior center. I don't need stigma and isolation. What I need is kick-ass empowerment guidance that's going to help me turn this adversity on its head and move forward. And I've really thought about this. I mean, every one of us have struggles. Every one of us have challenges. I know we do. So why is it, as a society, and I have been guilty of this too, and maybe it's fear and maybe it's discomfort, but why is it that we put labels on certain kinds of challenges and we shove people over into a corner? Quite honestly, I felt like I was being told to go join the leper colony for the blind. And I'm telling you, like, the last thing you need to hear when you're dealing with so much pain in your life is to now prep up for stigma and social isolation and go join your senior center vision loss support group. So that, again, is one of the ways that I'm going to harness my adversity. I'm going to use my story to put a face on this and change perceptions and remind everybody that we're all in this together. And the best thing that we can do is unite and help each other. So those are the ways that I'm harnessing my adversity and using it as a strength. And now I'm posing this question to you and flipping it back to you and really challenging all of you. I know all of you have adversity and challenges, so what are you doing with it? Is your adversity harnessing you? Or are you harnessing your adversity? And if you aren't, what are the steps that you can take to harness it, that you can take to flip it on its head and really use it as a strength? What are the ways that you can use your adversity not only to benefit you, but to benefit those around you? I mean, all of you are in these leadership positions and you have so much influence and you have the ability, you've got the choice. I mean, none of us can necessarily control the challenges that are thrown at us, but what we can control is what we're going to do with it and how we're going to respond. You've got a choice. You can put out that high energy. You can use it to motivate and inspire and lift those around you, whether in the workforce or at home, in your personal life. Or you can let it take you down and let it take those around you down too. That is your choice. The one thing that I learned, you know, in the academic setting, because I worked in a lot of high schools, and I know it holds true in business as well, is that when you connect with people on a heart and soul level, you increase productivity. But even more important, when you connect with people as whole person, you elevate quality of life and make it better for everyone around. And that is my challenge to all of you.